Welcome back to the Oscar Project Podcast, the show where I discuss Oscar-nominated films year by year. I'm your host, Jonathan Eicherberg, and today I'm bringing you a little something different in a special author interview. I've been fortunate enough to connect with several authors of books about movies recently and decided to start interviewing them, bringing their unique perspectives to you on the podcast. These books span the genre from detailed critical text to list books and hopefully even some filmmaker biographies in the future. Today I'm kicking things off with an interview with Mia Mask about her book, Black Rodeo, A History of the African-American Western. Before I jump into the interview, I want to encourage you to subscribe in your podcast player so you can get all the new episodes as soon as they are released. And if you like the interview and want to hear more, please consider leaving a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Mia Mask, our guest today, is a professor at Vassar College, where she teaches African-American cinema, documentary history, and seminars on topics including horror film and auteurs like Spike Lee, Charles Burnett, and Ava DuVernay. She also teaches feminist film theory, African national cinemas, and other genre courses. Her commentary can be heard on NPR, and her first book, Divas on Screen, Black Women in American Film, was published in 2009. Today, she joins me to talk about her new book, Black Rodeo, A History of the African-American Western. Mia, welcome to the show, and I'm happy to have you on as my first official podcast guest.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Well, first of all, let me just say how much I really enjoyed this book. Westerns have never really been a focus of my own personal film journey, but after reading the book, I have a renewed interest in the entire Western genre, and especially the Black Westerns that you cover.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah. You mentioned in the preface to the book that you've always loved horses, or at least loved them most of the time, since you were 8 years old. But what first got you interested in movies, and how did you end up wanting to teach about movies and movie history?
Oh, thank you for the question. Yes, I always loved horses as a kid, but I really came to cinema and developed a passion for movies as a young adult. It was probably in high school that I began watching a lot of movies. And then in college, I took a course with Professor Lee Edelman at Tufts University. And it was a course that he offered in the English department. And it was a course on Alfred Hitchcock. And yes, we did a close reading, a deep dive of about 14 Alfred Hitchcock movies, and it just changed my life, literally. I mean, it was the course that inspired me to apply to graduate school and made me realize that I wanted to be a film professor. And I think that's partially because what I realized in studying these Hitchcock films, getting my first introduction to not only Hitchcock, but also psychoanalytic film theory, that one could apply film theory, whether it's feminist film theory, psychoanalytic, and different methodological approaches to other texts as well. And so I felt like through film studies, I really learned how to read and interpret. Sure. And so that's when my passion really blossomed. And so I've been very passionate about film ever since.
That's fantastic. It's funny you mentioned Hitchcock because I was a film studies minor in college myself, and one of the classes that also made a big impact on me was a Hitchcock focused class as well. So it's definitely a good place to build a love of film history.
Yes, indeed.
I think the book does a great job of looking at a variety of Westerns that fit into the Black Western genre that you talk about. How did you go about picking the films to focus on for the book?
Yes, well, I tried to focus on, and I think I did a fairly good job of capturing what I was identifying as the most impactful Westerns. So there are other Western films that I do not address in depth in the book or that I don't talk about at all, more because I began to categorize them slightly differently. So for example, Gordon Parks' film, The Learning Tree, is mentioned in my book, but I don't do a close reading or a deep dive on that film simply because I characterize that text as a coming of age picture more than as a Western.
Right.
And that's, it was a very important film, certainly impactful, but not something that I was interpreting as an impactful Western. So I was really looking to identify those films that had a real connection to the zeitgeist and in some ways or way, shape or form changed the landscape, the cultural landscape by really influencing the films that came after them.
Excellent. Yeah, that's great. And I noticed as going through the book when I was reading it, there was kind of a distinct shift in the films you discuss from those that were directed by white directors with black actors to fully black casts in films directed by black directors, obviously more recently. Can you talk a little bit more about that shift and how we got from one to the other through the course of that history?
So I want to bounce this back to you a little bit because you say that you notice a distinct shift. And I'm just curious, what is the distinct shift that you notice? Because I'm also interested in what people take away from the book, what
Sure.
distinctions they garner from what I've said. So for you, there must be this distinct shift. And I'm wondering what that is.
Well, I just, looking at the earlier things that you talk about towards the beginning of the book, it seemed like they were, more done by white directors with, did a lot on Sidney Poitier, obviously, speaking about some of the other actors at that time. And then more recently, the films that have come in the last 10, 15 years seem to be more those directed by black directors with those, much larger black casts, where the entire cast is mainly black, whereas oftentimes in the earlier films that you talk about in the book, it's one or maybe two characters that are portrayed by black actors.
Sure. Okay, that makes sense. Now I'm honing in on where you are.
Sure.
So one of the things that should come across in the book is that it's also tracking or giving us a kind of like parallel history of the film industry and of African American participation in an ability to be included in film production. So
Sure.
I right. So my book is primarily a book that begins from 1950. So it's a post-World War II study.
Right.
But if you go back a little bit further, if you go back to the 20s and 30s, there were African American directors like Oscar Michaud, for example, who were making films that we might classify as some of the first African American Westerns, films like The Homesteader, for example. But once you get to the post-war era, right? We're still at a moment when African Americans don't really have access to mainstream film making. That is, really in the beginning of the civil rights movement, African Americans are not given opportunities to direct, and have very few opportunities to even star in Westerns at that
Right.
juncture. So I was interested in looking at the evolution of that, right? The
Sure.
beginning of when we start to see African American actors play a central role in these films, in Western films, and then how those roles evolved into African American participation becoming even more significant. So we're seeing not only more characters, but we're beginning to see the stories being written by and directed by African American directors and writers and craftspeople working on the films. So the book is charting, or trying to track that trajectory, if you will. And so that may be some of the shift or the shifting that you're seeing
Right.
in the chapters.
Yep. No, that makes total sense, and I like to see that progression. And you're right. I think it tracks with the industry as a whole, but also specific to this genre as well.
Right. And I appreciate, using the word progression, although I often want to be careful about that, right? Because
Right.
sometimes you
Yeah.
take two steps forward and three steps back
Exactly.
as directors, as folks are working in the industry and still encountering pushback, resistance, and forms of separatism and challenges that other directors were not facing. So,
Sure.
I want to be careful about saying, oh, well, there's this like clear trajectory of this clear
Right.
line by which and through which things have improved, right? So I'm trying to be a little bit more nuanced about that.
Yep, totally understand that. What do you think was your biggest challenge in writing the book, and how did you go about overcoming that?
I love this question that you're asking me because whenever we as academics think about the biggest challenge, it's always time, right? There's just never enough time because you're
Right.
always balancing the research and the writing up and the analysis and the writing up of that research with your own teaching and your, it's just sort of your obligations on campus. So whether it's advising or committee work. So I felt like the biggest challenge was not so much access to materials or resources. It was just finding the time to spend on the book because it was such a labor of love. It was really an enjoyable project. So I never felt like I had enough time.
Right. Yeah, no, and that totally comes through in the writing that you really have a huge passion for that. Now you've obviously watched a lot of films in your career and obviously in your research for this book, but if you had to pick your top three, what would they be? And they can be Westerns, they can be any genre. What would your top three films be, would you say?
This is such a difficult question, Jonathan.
I know,
and it's
I know.
And it's one that I always try to duck. And I say that it's like asking who are your top three favorite relatives. And
right.
the reason that's a difficult question, because a lot of people say, oh, that's easy, I know who those people are. The reason I find that difficult with respect to film is I feel like films are, well, like relatives, you know, you have a different relationship to each
sure.
one, right? So, you know, you have a different relationship to your aunts and uncles than you do to cousins. And so I feel like film is something that when you consume it, it's you're in a particular mood for something. And so it's difficult for me to identify one or two or three films. But if you want me to pull out a few Westerns that I was particularly passionate about, I'd say that Buck and the Preacher stands out as one of the films that was sort of most important to me and actually inaugurated this entire project. I wrote in the Poitier anthology that I published back in 2014, that began with a work that I was doing on Buck and the Preacher. And I was part of the Sydney Poitier International Film Festival and Conference in Nassau, Bahamas, where I presented the Buck and the Preacher paper that I gave. And we were fortunate enough at that time, back in 2010, to be able to have Mr. Poitier sort of, wasn't Skype then, but kind of like call into a group conference call that we had with him.
Oh, and that must have been fantastic.
It was amazing, such an amazing and enriching experience. And one of the questions we were able to ask him was, of all of the films that you have made, that you've appeared in, do you have a favorite? We know which is your favorite. And he said that Buck and the Preacher was his favorite. And so you can imagine that I was just over the moon.
Sure.
And he said, yeah. And he said this, I think, in part because it was the first film that he directed. It was
right.
his directorial debut. And then he had several other reasons why it was a particularly passionate project for him. So that film stands out as one of my favorite Westerns. I'd say Thomasine and Bushrod, which is a little known, quirky, almost like B-Western, is a film that I find interesting because I think it has been very impactful. If we look at, for example, Melina Matsoukas's Queen and Slim, right, which came out a few years ago, I think we see the imprint still of films like Thomasine and Bushrod, right, as well as Bonnie and Clyde. But these films are richly intertextual with one another. And so that intertextuality of Bonnie and Clyde, Thomasine and Bushrod, Queen and Slim, it really excites those of us who are in film studies and we're interested in that kind of connectivity. So I'd say Thomasine and Bushrod. And then more recently, I'm actually a fan of Django Unchained. I don't love all of Tarantino's work, but I do like Django Unchained. I think it's an interesting film for a number of reasons that I say in the book.
Right.
So that gives you three.
Perfect. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. Now, what surprised you in your research for the book that maybe you weren't able to include, if there was anything, and you know that you think if you had to do a new edition, what would you like to add to the book that people should know about?
Yeah, there wasn't anything I really wasn't able to include. Well, actually, that's not true. Let me go back. I'll say that Lobo, as you know, I write about Lobo in the book. And for folks who don't know, Lobo was the first African-American comic book character. So even before Black Panther, Lobo emerged as the first African-American comic book hero. He was a Western figure who had his first two comic book debut in 1965. And as folks know, the Black Panther emerged in 1966. So I found that this, you know, this was a discovery that I made along the way. I hadn't intended to work on comic books at all. And so I would definitely like to have included more on that material and on Lobo. So I'm looking to kind of maybe go back, do a deeper dive on that. And then more recently, I've discovered some additional Westerns that were made outside of the United States. For example, the South African film, Five Fingers for Marseille, which is not a new release, but it is a 2017 film that I didn't include in the book, that if I were to now go back and rewrite some later sections, I would include a discussion of Five Fingers for Marseille. Obviously, again, not an American film, but there are a few non-American films that I reference in the right. book.
Great. And along that line, were there any interviews with people or any specific films that you were looking for and couldn't find a copy of, anyone you couldn't get in touch with while doing that research?
No, not really. I mean, obviously, it would have been nice to be able to talk to Mr. Poitier more about this, sure. about the work, or Woody Strode. But no, I mean, the book is not really a collection of interviews per se, right. but really an overview of these films and really an attempt to call attention to them, because there were so many people who said to me, Black Westerns, really? Those exist? Or like, what, Mia, what films are you talking about? So it was amazing to discover that there are lots of people who don't even know these films. And some of these folks are like real film buffs. So right. I was just excited by the opportunity to put these films together in a collection, in a discussion, in dialogue with one another, and bring them to people's attention.
Fantastic. Now, for me, I always, and this goes back to my days of you know, doing film classes in college, I look at the bibliography at the end of a book like yours, and I want to read everything in there. And I know that's not realistic. So can you help me out and anyone else who's like that and point us to a couple of resources, one or two, that would be a good place to start if anyone wants to learn more about this topic?
Absolutely. So one of the books that I enjoyed tremendously was an anthology titled Westerns in the Global South. And this is a collection that has a discussion of a number of Westerns, obviously made outside of the United States. But as I was kind of implying with Five Fingers for Marseille, I'm beginning to also look at the way the Western has emerged, and even Black Westerns or Afrocentric Westerns have emerged in other parts of the world. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed that collection and just seeing the connections that people were making between some of those films and classic Western films. I also, somewhat differently, but in another related vein, I really enjoyed Cynthia Miller and A. Bowden Van Riper's film Undead in the West, Vampires, Zombies, Mummies, and Ghosts on the Cinematic Frontier, which, you know, I'm fascinated by the Western for many reasons, one of which is its malleability, right? It is a genre that is so incredibly flexible, you know, capricious, can be utilized in a variety of ways. So I'm interested in like the Walking Dead as a Western. I'm interested in a lot of mm-hmm. of ways in which the Western emerges across and undergirds other genres. So looking at the sort of vampire, zombie, mummy, you know, and ghost genres, of sort of like horror and fantastic elements of the horror genre, since I also teach the horror genre, interests me. And so I think that those would be two fun books for your listeners to entertain.
Excellent. I'll definitely add those into our show notes so people can check those out. Sure. Now, you mentioned in your appendix interview with Jeff Canoe that you worked with Criterion to program some films a while back. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that experience was like?
Absolutely. So I've been working with Criterion for a while, and I think they first reached out to me to to talk with them about some work I had done on Poitier films, probably Buck and the Preacher. And I was delighted when they asked me to curate a 11 or 12 film retrospective of Poitier films for the Criterion streaming channel. That went so well, and we had such great sort of synergy and chemistry, that is their production team and myself, and sort of where the ways in which we were approaching Poitier's work, that they then later asked me to come on and consult and do some other work for them. So I happened to also be on the DVD extras for Swing Time, where they really needed somebody to talk about how problematic blackface is in that context of that Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers musical. I also consulted for them and was included in the on the DVD re-release of A Raisin in the Sun, right? Again, with an emphasis on Poitier's oeuvre and his work. And so it was out of those experiences, but really, I think, starting earlier with the Poitier, such as the general Poitier retrospective, that I had developed a relationship with Criterion, and we just sort of kept working together. And it's been a really fruitful experience, I think, on both ends.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Now, what are your hopes for the book now that it's out in the world? What are you getting feedback from it? People on Twitter, online, anybody talking about it?
Yeah, so I'm just delighted, Jonathan, that the book is doing so well, that it's being so well received, that it's selling so well, and that people are not only reading it, but then telling me, Mia, I loved this section. I love this chapter. I love the book. I mean, I'm so happy. I'm a little bit like, well, what was wrong with Divas? I mean, or did people just not read it? But I think the Western is also just such a fun genre that people want to know more about, because now we've sort of moved a little bit away from the Westerns. You know, when we look at sci-fi movies, they're sort of like Westerns in outer space, or, you know, television shows like The Walking Dead are sort of like Westerns, you know, writ in zombie, you know, dressed up in zombie clothing. So, I think that it's a particularly fun topic, so I'm delighted that it's doing really well. I would love to try to bring it to fruition as some kind of documentary. I would love to see where we could go with that. I'm a big fan of Robin Means Coleman's horror noir and what she did with that book, instead of turning it into a documentary about the horror genre and race. And so my hope is that people just continue to read it, learn from it. And one suggestion that I have made to readers, is particularly those who are enjoying it, is to say, I'm so glad you're enjoying it. Why don't you watch some of the films along with the chapters?
Absolutely.
Or even do it with a group of friends. Watch a film together, read a chapter, and then discuss them. And you can sort of make a, have a book club or a book group around the book and the movies.
Fantastic. That's an excellent, excellent idea. And I might just take you up on that idea myself.
Well, good. Let me know how it goes.
We'll do. Now, I have a couple of questions not specifically related to the book, but before I move on to those, is there anything else specific to the book that you want to touch on?
No, not really. I mean, just that I'm just delighted that you've enjoyed it. And, like I said, there are probably a few films that are on the periphery that are not non-American films that I might have included. But I'm just delighted that it's being so well received.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, so onto the non-book questions. If you could invite three movie characters to your next dinner party, who would they be and why?
You know, I'm going to be really naughty here and say I'm not sure that they would be movie characters. Initially, I was thinking like, maybe I want to invite like Hannibal Lecter and like, you know, but seriously, like I'm thinking I'm not sure that they would be movie characters. They might be television characters.
Okay, because, let that go too.
You know, so I've been thinking about like, okay, maybe I'd want to have Tommy Shelby from Peaky Blinders, and maybe I'd want to talk to like Saul from Better Call. So, you know, I don't know. Right. There's so many characters. Like, we're in this like amazing age of prestige television right now, and of these amazing series, that part of me is really captivated by all of the wonderful TV characters. But let me get back to you on that question.
Sounds good. We'll let you pick movie or TV characters.
Okay.
And then do you have any other books? I know you mentioned a couple earlier in my previous question, but any other books, movie-related or non-movie-related, that you've been reading recently that you might be able to recommend?
Sure. Well, I'll recommend one fiction book that, and this is like really a luxury for me because I don't get to read enough fiction, but I have been enjoying Geraldine Brooks's Horse, a novel. You know, she's the author of several other books. She's a winner of a Pulitzer, and I'm just really enjoying this book because it also has horses in it and sort of thematically related to my Westerns book. So I would recommend Horse, a novel. It's really fun read.
Excellent. And lastly, before we wrap up, I know you've just a little bit ago finished this book, but what projects do you have lined up next? Do you have any other books coming our way? I know you mentioned maybe trying to work on a documentary about the Westerns, yeah. But what else do you have coming up next?
Yeah, I also am thinking that I'd like to do some work on Lobo, on this comic book character Lobo, and find out more about him. And because he's recently been reimagined, but as a non-Black sort of superhero character. Mm. So I'm interested in the trajectory of Lobo. Sure. I'm also interested in returning to film proper. So the 1972 film, The Harder They Come, is a film that I'm very interested in writing about, and I've gotten some inquiries from presses. And Five Fingers for Marseille, you know, these non-American films from the global South that are taking up the Western genre are all really piquing my curiosity. So those are directions that I might be pursuing next.
Well, we'll keep our eyes peeled for those, and hopefully we get to talk to you again when one of those projects comes to fruition.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Well, thank you so much for your time today, Mia. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me and sharing the stories and the information in the book.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you again to my guest today, Mia Mask. Her latest book is Black Rodeo, A History of the African American Western, and I'll have a link to where you can pick that up in the show notes, along with links to the movies and books mentioned throughout the interview. Please come back for my next episode, where I'll be speaking with Charlotte Booth and Brian Billington, authors of The Movie Lover's Guide to London. Until then, I hope to see you at the movies.